This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
We were talking on the break that everyone has that animal that is their animal, the animal they would have that cause for, right? So my father used to be gorillas. He loved when he learned all about gorillas through movies, documentaries, all that stuff. So he would go on and on about the treatment of gorillas. Is yours elephants?
Yeah, I think so. There's a few, but definitely elephants.
We know better to ask me. Jeff Ryman, did you say you have one, Jeff, or no?
I don't think I have one, but my fiance Erin, like, she's obsessed with sharks. Like, any shark documentary, like that National Geographic or any sort of show like that, or even when, like, those shows you see on those channels when sharks attack, like, just like the rogue shark,
like Shark Week, like, and all that, right?
Yeah, the Shark Week stuff is basically what she loves, and it's kind of cool. Like you said, everybody has that animal that they just love for some strange reason. Some people can't put a pin on it as to why they like that animal, but people do.
Adopt a species. That's what it is. I remember as a kid, we went to, I don't know what the heck it was called. They used to travel this little circus around, and my parents would take me, and my dad got frustrated because I didn't want to get up on the elephant. They were, oh, it's okay. It's okay. I'll leave him alone. I don't want to get up. What if he's tired of us being put up on him? No, I don't want to get up. And I think some other kid, you know, said, like, he doesn't want to go. I will. Delahanty, you were that kid, right? You would have climbed up onto, been put up on an elephant and had a great time up there.
I feel like I was hesitant, but I do think that happened at an early fair, although I was pretty oblivious to the traumas the animals were suffering in those sorts of conditions.
Yeah. I was always sympathetic to them. I just always felt, leave them alone, and I was more than happy to. Today for our regional content report, we're joined by Ryan Delahanty, AMI Content Development Specialist in Halifax. Ryan, do you have an elephant story?
I do. All of your talk reminded me of a documentary I saw at a local film festival a couple years ago. It's a National Film Board, so it's available free online for anybody wanting to check it out, called Balakrishna. It is a heartbreaking story. So in 1967, as part of Canada's centennial celebrations, there was an Indian-owned factory in East River, Nova Scotia, and they shipped Balakrishna, a bull elephant, from India to Halifax. I think it was a little bit delayed, missed the Canada Day celebrations, but lived chained up outside this factory in a small town through to the winter. And so winter in Nova Scotia became a pretty dire situation. And so this documentary, I think it's about 15 minutes long, made in 2019, beautifully made, really heartbreaking story. But I believe a young paper boy had befriended this elephant and was very sympathetic to its plight. It was trying to get action taken to put it in a better situation. So lovely documentary, but a really heartbreaking story to check out.
I know here in St. Thomas, south of London, they're of course well known for the one of the circuses was in St. Thomas, and they were performing. I think that's what was going on. Elephant got loose and ended up getting hit by a train. It was terrible. Oh, wow. And again, you heard so many people start, and even way back when that happened, you know, that what are we doing here? What is happening? How could this poor animal? And, you know, for years, people kind of made it the joke towards, you know, the elephant and that kind of thing, how sorrowful. But you knew people were just so distraught and sad. And why is our town, why do we kind of revel in being remembered for the town where this poor elephant died in? So to St. Thomas listeners out there, we feel your pain, folks. Ryan, you want to start with an interesting story in New Brunswick where they're launching a new mental health peer support system, for university students. And this is something, Ryan, we have talked about this kind of stuff on the show. When you go to college, when you go to university, when things are tough, when you are struggling, where do you go and people don't know and you don't know the community, so you have no idea where to turn? What's the latest here?
Absolutely. I think I would have benefited from something like this in my college days. I kind of had a little bit of a breakdown or crisis and completely changed programs about 3 years in because I was just not enjoying the path I was on. It all proved well, but it was a very, very difficult thing to do to broach that and to kind of recognize it. And so it's encouraging to see more is being done for the mental health of university students. And this is resulting from $2 million just announced in federal funding to train students at the University of New Brunswick and four other universities across the country to help their fellow students with mental health struggles. So the three-year campus peer support pilot will be led by the Canadian Mental Health Association and see 100 students hired across the five schools, which also includes the University of Prince Edward Island, Trent University, Medicine Hat College, and the University of British Columbia. Krista Baldwin, the executive director of the Canadian Mental Health Association of New Brunswick, told CBC that peer support is emotional and practical support between people who share common experiences, and the students will be trained to share coping strategies, help navigate the mental health system, and instill hope in people. She said this is something already being done to some degree in universities, but the training will improve the students' ability to help, and the 100 positions will be distributed to the five universities based on population and need. So probably won't be an even split between them.
Okay. Have they found an increased need for these sorts of supports after 2 years of COVID-19? How did the new program complement existing services as well?
So according to research done by the CMHA, Canadian Mental Health Association, 61% of Canadians aged 18 to 24 say their mental health has declined since the beginning of the pandemic. According to the New Brunswick Health Council, 30% of New Brunswick youth have perceived mental health needs but may go unmet because of stigma, lack of awareness of resources, and long wait times. In 2019 to 20, youth referred for addiction and mental health services waited 58 days from the day the referral was received to the day a clinician was assigned as their caseworker. And then youth in other parts of New Brunswick, such as St. John, had a shorter wait time of about 41 days, but in more rural areas, it's often over 3 months of waiting before you're seen. And making matters quite a bit worse for UNB students in Fredericton, their only psychiatrist at the Student Health Center was suspended in 2020 after multiple sexual assault complaints from patients. The university and psychiatrist are currently being sued by one of the victims. And 2 years later, there's still no psychiatrist listed on the Health Center website. A UNB spokesperson told CBC that the Student Health Center has a referral relationship with a psychiatrist in the community who's not formally part of the school. St. Thomas University shares counseling and health services with UNB, but is not part of the peer support program. And the St. John campus of University of New Brunswick is also part of the peer counseling pilot. So it does vary a little bit amongst the schools affiliated with UNB. UNB themselves in the Fredericton campus employ 5.5 full-time counselors and one full-time director of counseling who also counsels students. So you know, UNB Fredericton, NBCC, New Brunswick Community College of Fredericton, St. Thomas University all share a province-funded LGBTQ wellness coordinator. The three campuses also share a specially trained sexual assault support advocate. So it is a bit of a mishmash of things and obvious why there is such a need for the peer support and to really help navigate this system where, depending on how you identify, what your issues are, you may have to go in one of a number of directions. So they hope these peer support workers will be working alongside counselors and the other service providers. The students who will be hired will be vetted to make sure they're in a place where they feel well and able to take on this sort of work. And they would also be offered help as part of the program to maintain their own mental health.
And that help is so important because you talk the workload, you look at all that, you look at the what's out there and needed and how thin the people must be spread.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think this will, and often, you know, I think it's a lot more approachable. You've got a months long wait list for, you know, a clinician, somebody who you might not feel so comfortable with, whereas, you know, you might be way more at ease with your peers who are going through more similar experiences.
Excellent. Okay, Rod, we often talk about the mental health benefits of recreational programs that are out there, like horseback riding. You've got news of a new surfing program about to launch in Nova Scotia. What's this all about?
So this results from a growing body of research into surf therapy, showing that surfing has a positive effect on people with mental health issues such as PTSD, anxiety, and depression. So locally, Shelby Miller is planning to start her own surf therapy program at the popular Lawrencetown Beach just outside Halifax. Miller has a master's degree in counseling, psychology, and fell in love with surfing after first trying it on a whim about 4 years ago. She told Saltwire News in an article, it's a really therapeutic sort of activity, like being in the water and hearing all the different sounds, and then the feeling you get when you catch a wave is just indescribable. Miller had worked in psychiatric units and youth care homes and was interested in crisis counseling, but after watching a documentary about surf therapy, a program specifically for veterans with PTSD, she realized that she could combine her two passions and hopes to show people the healing power of the ocean when her program Sea Clear, that's S-E-A, Sea Clear Therapeutics, launches in June.
Nice. So cool to get that, you know, physical activity, the water, the everything. It definitely does sound like therapy to me. Tell us a little bit more about surf therapy. Is it something open to people without surfing experience?
I think if I recall, Kelly and I spent a day on the beach where Kelly was trying out surfing years ago. Feels like a lifetime ago.
Wow.
And I remember having to get the lav in your wetsuit, Kelly, and figure out how we could do that and get you in the water and recording. So it is something that is, I think, pretty difficult, I think, for a lot of beginners. And surf therapy, you know, this program, they want to combine surfing with targeted therapeutic structures such as group discussions to promote mental and physical health. And so during these sessions, Miller will ask participants to describe how they feel in their bodies on the beach, in the water, and after catching a wave. Also helps people overcome social isolation, which is a symptom of PTSD. And it just really forces people, I think, to be present in the moment, focus on the waves and the experience. And so a 2015 study she references on surf therapy found that at-risk youth participants reported feeling better, happier, had fun, made friends, and felt fitter. So a lot of benefits there. Mm-hmm. She says you don't need to be a pro surfer to try the surf therapy program she's starting, but does recommend her participants take a surfing lesson she recommends East Coast Surf School, a popular local organization. So it is encouraged, I think, that you have a little bit of a foundation before you take part in Sea Clear Therapeutics. And the surf school will also offer discounted gear rentals to her clients.
Okay, Rye, we have less than about 40 seconds. Sounds like an interesting program. I believe there's also a program near Halifax, and it's yearly, that helps people with various disabilities enjoy a day surfing. Any news on that for the 2022 edition?
Absolutely. Looks like it'll be back this summer. That's Life Rolls On, an award-winning event empowering people with mobility disabilities to experience freedom by riding a wave. They just did an update about a month ago, announcing Saturday, August 20th as the date for this year. It is an international event, but this is the only one that happens in Canada. And so if anybody's interested in learning more, you can find them on Facebook, facebook.com/Life Rolls On Martinique, M-A-R-T-I-N-I-Q-U-E. And Paula is the local organizer. So people interested in either volunteering or participating can reach Paula at 902-494-7594 or lromartinique@gmail.com.
Thanks, Rye. Good stuff. Our content development specialist join us Wednesdays and Fridays here on Kelly & Company. Coming up next, Mary Mammoliti of Kitchen Confession talks to us about eating fresh this spring by focusing on the produce in season. Stay tuned.
Join me every couple weeks for the Outdoors with Lawrence Gunther podcast, where we learn about outdoor tech and tips. Plus, we look at news affecting the environment. AMI's Outdoors with Lawrence Gunther is available from your favorite podcast provider.